Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC with a call-in to start this hour on how our listeners under 40 would solve Medicare and Social Security. In our 30 Issues election series all this week, we've been talking about the national debt. And every Friday during the series, we'll be opening the phones for you to follow up on some aspect or aspects that came up during the week of interviews and explainers and opinion segments during 30 Issues. Next week, by the way, it'll all be about inequality. The week after that, it'll all be about big government. But for today, I thought we would follow up by opening the phones for people under 40 with your solutions for Medicare and Social Security. If we keep borrowing money for this, you'll have to pay a lot of it back in your lifetimes out of your taxes. But you also probably want these programs to be there when you retire. So listeners under 40, what would you have the politicians do about Social Security and Medicare? 212-433-WNYC is our phone number, 212-433-9692. Maybe this presidential campaign is the first time you've been focusing on it to whatever degree you have in the last few months. Maybe it's the first time you're realizing that a lot of this is your dime versus your benefits. So what have you been thinking as the campaign has revolved so much around competing versions of what to do about Social Security and Medicare? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And not that these are the only things that need to be addressed to deal with the debt. Certainly taxes need to be addressed. Certainly the military needs to be addressed. But everybody thinks that Medicare and Social Security, especially Medicare, in some way need to be addressed. And so that's the question today for people under 40 as you look much further ahead in your lives to the prospect of this or the prospect of paying for this and the dissonance that that may bring up for you. Some of the things typically on the table, raising the eligibility age. The eligibility age by a few years to about 68 by the time you get there, raising payroll taxes, the dedicated tax that we all pay if we're employed for the senior entitlements, whether or not we're in the 47%, by the way, means testing the entitlements. Richer people should not be getting Social Security and Medicare subsidized by all other Americans as they do today, some people say. And we have the competing Obama and Ryan plans for reducing the growth rate of Medicare, either the government deciding what's cost-effective and reimbursing doctors accordingly, Obama, or the Ryan plan giving you a Medicare voucher, which in effect pressures both you and the private insurance companies you buy your Medicare policy from to hold costs down. So for our 30 Issues in 30 Days follow-up Friday segment, the phones are open for people under 40 to hear what you're thinking as all these politicians, most of whom are older than you, debate Medicare and Social Security. It's going to be your dime, but it's going to be your benefits. 212-433-9692. And while your calls are coming in, we'll talk about one way to figure out how you want to solve the national debt. With me now is Dave Rejeski. He's director of the Science and Technology Innovation Program at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars in Washington, D.C. He's helped develop an online game called Budget Hero. It's like Guitar Hero, but for fantasy politicians rather than fantasy rock stars, developed by the Wilson Center in Washington and American Public Media and Public Radio's Public Insight Network. Hi, Dave. Welcome to WNYC.
Yes. Glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
How do you play Budget Hero?
Well, you're basically given control of the entire federal budget. You're playing with a Congressional Budget Office model. So I think basically you go in, and the game mechanics
were built. So I'll say, by the way, it's just a little bit less grandiose than Risk, where you're out to conquer the world.
Yeah, slightly, though the challenge is probably as great. So it's set up as a strategy card game. So, kids that grew up playing Pokemon cards or Magic cards can go into this and immediately see the similarities. And anybody that's played cards, because we actually have a lot of people over 65 playing this game, can go in, and the learning curve is very, very slow. very, very, very fast. So people go in and basically take control of the entire budget, and there's about 100 options in there. They also play not with money, but they play with values. So we're asking them to earn badges. So they may care about green, they may care about energy independence, increasing our competitive advantage, downsizing government, beefing up national security. They're playing essentially around value propositions. Or they can play the candidates now with our new version. So they can actually go in and play Mitt Romney or Obama.
Is this like those online tools like the New York Times and some other news organizations have built that let you see the total federal budget or total revenues and decide what you would spend money on and what you would cut to balance the budget based on your own priorities? Or does it go further than that?
Yeah, I think it's quite often for, you know, we get 20,000, 30,000 emails every few years on this, and it's been in place now for 4 years, so we actually launched it during the last election campaign.
Uh-huh.
I think for a lot of people, there's three lessons. It's, for a lot of people, it's the first time they ever saw the entire budget. People write and just never knew how much money, where was this, for instance, this year, $3.7 trillion going, and how much was going into health care versus entitlement programs versus defense spending versus science versus infrastructure. I think that's the first lesson. The second one is, in order to change anything, they have to make a large decision. They have to move hundreds of billions of dollars. So in the budget game we have, you can go in and cut the Environmental Protection Agency's budget by 50%, no real impact. I think the third thing is the only way that you can actually progress, and this was also clear in the New York Times game, it's clear in ours, is you've got to go and play a portfolio strategy. So you need to raise revenues, you need to actually cut entitlements, and you need to do something about discretionary spending. So if you play from a purely partisan standpoint, quite often you really can't succeed in moving the debt needle at all.
And in the real world, this is proving to be a very hard game to win for, I guess, precisely that reason, at least in part, not so much because the math is impossible, though it's pretty hard, but because they can't compromise. And that's true in the game. The game is set up to present you with that challenge, to compromise on your own values.
Yes, it does that. We played it a lot of times, for instance, in school settings and with university students. And when we'll put them into groups. And one of the interesting things, an interesting lesson, is if we put an even number of people into the group, quite often they gridlock. So it's an interesting reflection of reality. As soon as you have to actually play the game with other people, there's a lot of debates, and quite often it's very difficult to compromise. But I think one of the lessons from the game is without compromise, it's very, very difficult to take on the debt in its present situation.
Do you have the data to see how people from different demographic groups, different age groups or whatever, wind up winning the game?
We have a lot of data. We give people an option to share data, demographics, at the end, and about 10 to 15% of the people that play the game actually do that because they can actually then see how other people played it around the country. So it's been played about 1.4 million times, and so we have a fairly large database with about 17,000 games in it. One of the interesting things, because you're obviously talking to young people, if we look at the top policy choices of young people, we're talking about less than 18, the number one is actually slowing the increase in Social Security benefits.
That's people under 18 years old?
Under 18. Now, as we advance in age, that drops down. But interestingly, even the gray gamers, the folks over 65, it remains in the top 10. So, you know, there is a sort of an age dependency on the people's willing to take on Social Security and potentially raise the Social Security age. But their willingness to take on this entitlement is clearly stronger when they're young, but it doesn't go away. The other thing that changes with age is there's a policy in there that increasing drug costs for wealthy seniors. And that's something that actually increases with age. The other thing that you asked about, I think, in the questions is the young people below 18, and also we have another group that we divide up from 18 to about 45, are much more willing to cut Medicare waste. And so there's a policy in there. So
everybody wants to cut waste. The hard part is after you've cut the waste.
After you've cut it, yeah.
And you still have a budget deficit, then what do you cut the meat out of?
Right.
How does the military fare in this game generally?
If we look at 4 years of data, the number one policy that's come up again and again is actually rapidly cutting troop numbers. We've changed the nature of that policy. So first it was Iraq, now it's Afghanistan. But that is the number one policy that's been played over 4 years. And that's the number one for most political parties, but even for the Republican players, it comes up number four or five.
And taxes?
Taxes is, tends to be also fairly high. So there is a there is a willingness. Young people want to tax carbon, tax toxic industries. So there is a lot of people sort of looking at sort of potentially taxing. There's tax private equity managers has come up high in the past year or so. So there's a willingness, I think, to play both with the tax packages, with the entitlements, and also with discretionary spending. And that's usually the way people advance in the game.
All right. Dave Rejeski, Director of the Science and Technology Innovation Program at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. They've got this game called Budget Hero, where you can play both the math and the politics of solving the national debt. What web address should people use to play this game?
www.budgethero.org. If you're a teacher, we've got another site up, teachbudgethero.org, that provides resources for classroom use.
Budgethero.org, and we're putting a link on our show page, so listeners, if you forget their address, you can go to ours at wnyc.org and click on Brian Lehr Show. Dave, thanks a lot.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And now to your calls on our question for our under 40 listeners. What would you do about Medicare and Social Security as we deal with the national debt? You want these benefits there for yourself, presumably, but this is also your dime if the country borrows or spends more money today. So what are you thinking? Lauren in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Lauren.
Hi, Brian. I'm a huge fan of the show.
Thank you.
Just want to say I think that we should start increasing the eligibility age. Start with people who are maybe now under the age of 30 and begin increasing the age to 65 to 67. Make that the new retirement age. I also think that we can get private industry involved by having tax benefits for 401k programs and pension programs, and then maybe having some kind of tax write-off for people who will forgo Social Security to use these different retirement programs when they're older.
So mostly you would raise the eligibility age, you'd raise the contribution in the taxes. Do you think it's going to be there for you, years, 30 plus years from now?
I think so. I think it's an important enough program that even the politicians will come together and make this work.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you starting us off.
Thank you.
In Monmouth County, you're on WNYC. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Brian. How's it going?
Good. What do you think?
I'm a 36-year-old physical therapist. I do home care in Monmouth County. And, based on what I do, most therapists get paid on a, fee-for-service model. So the more visits we make, the more we get paid, essentially. So I think in order for Medicare to really to move further, they have to base it more on a wellness model where physicians and hospital systems get paid for people staying healthy as opposed to when they get sick and need services.
So even with people over 65 or 68 years of age, you think you can financially structure Medicare around a wellness model rather than a seeing the doctor when you're sick model?
I think you can start it now, or at least in the near future, because a lot of the baby boomers now are a lot more internet savvy, so they'll use things such as telehealth services and things of that nature, as well as mobile apps to kind of encourage them to stay healthy. And because you have that population getting older and eventually going into Medicare, that's really where I think you can see a lot of the savings. But you have to remove certain barriers like licensure between states and certain regulations on physician and provider treatment.
Thank you very much. Josh in Howard Beach, you're on WNYC. Hi, Josh.
Hi, Brian. I'm surprised it actually got through.
It's not that hard.
Yeah, so I agree with the first caller that we should increase the age for Social Security and retirement. My idea was that the government should be investing more so in educating educational technologies that would that we could then sell to the rest of the world using our traditional strategies and really emphasizing on our specialty on in the internet.
How old are you today?
I'm 22.
And so when you say raise the retirement age, if it's 65 now, what do you think it should be?
Probably around 70. I think that would be a good age, maybe 10 to 15 years from now.
Do you think Social Security and Medicare will be there when you get to that age?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's going to be there. I think we respect our elders, and that's something that is unanimous between party lines.
What do you think about the argument that comes up regarding physical laborers? It's one thing if somebody's working in an office, if somebody's a construction worker or something, to have them, force them to keep going until they're 70?
No, I don't think that we should force them. I think that's dependent on probability. But, yeah, I mean, everyone has a chance that they're not going to be, something's going to happen. So we should take that into account.
Josh, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Antonios in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Antonios.
Hi, Brian. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say that the solution from this, from my perspective, would be to reduce military, defense, central intelligence agency funding and use the money that we recruit from that to pay down our debt service and also to fully fund Medicare and Medicaid.
So I assume if you were playing our last guest's budget game, Budget Hero, you'd probably find that there isn't enough money in the military budget unless you really, 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 really cut it to do both of those things, and that you have to deal with Medicare and less so, but still some Social Security as well.
That is undoubtedly true. But if you pay down the debt service as well as funding Medicare and Medicaid, one of the largest expenses the federal government has is our debt service, is interest on debt. If we pay down that debt with the money that we recoup from the military cutbacks, then we can pay for all the social contract programs that we have.
Mm-hmm. Antonios, thank you very much. By the way, as a lot of people are acknowledging on our comments page, Medicare and Social Security are not exactly in the same category, even though we think of them as the two senior entitlements that get paid for out of the payroll tax. In terms of their financial health, they're not really in the same category because so far Social Security has always been self-sustaining and has always run a surplus. That's going to change after a certain point in the future when the ratio of workers to retirees hits a certain tipping point. But Medicare is in much worse shape and is a much more serious rate of growth of spending problem, just to acknowledge that those two things should not be seen as exactly the same or exactly in the same same shape. All right, 212-433-WNYC for another few minutes for people under 40. After hearing all this debate this week on our 30 Issues show and elsewhere during this campaign season about Medicare and Social Security, what would you do? How much are you willing to pay or borrow that'll eventually come out of your tax money? And how much do you want there for you and expect there for you in terms of benefits 30 years from now, whatever it is. Mike in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hey, Brian, how you doing?
Okay.
Yeah, I'm 38. You know, I don't think that there's going to be a problem in the future because, I mean, I'm just going to make sure, and everybody else in my age group is going to make sure that we get what we deserve. I think raising the retirement age with if people are more healthy is good because people can work longer. But I think we look at all of this the wrong way. We see this as a cost where it's like a black hole. Money goes into it. It doesn't come out. But you had someone who was a physical therapist. And what I'd like to find out to see is what is the real cost here? Because of all the thousands, hundreds of thousands of people and millions of people whose jobs depend on the healthcare system, they generate taxes. They generate money. They buy goods and services. So if we took healthcare costs out of the economy, if everybody became well tomorrow, we didn't need hospitals and physical therapists and nurses and ambulance drivers and everybody else who's involved, the pharmaceutical companies, the economy would collapse. So why are we looking at it like it's a black hole any more that we look at the money that we have to spend for food mm-hmm. as a black hole?
It is true that the calculation is complicated because one of the fastest growing sectors of the economy and one of the fastest growing areas for jobs in this country, and we all know we need more jobs, is the healthcare sector. On the other hand, when a lot of that spending comes from the government, which means from our tax dollars, then you know that counts on the other side of the ledger. So, Mike, thank you very much. Let's get one more in. Derek in Brooklyn. Hi, Derek. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. My idea is to tie Social Security retirement age to a scientific standard so that you don't lengthen it for everyone because a recent Times article showed that life expectancy has actually gone down in the U.S. and particularly had the most salient factor was education. So, for instance, people with a high school or less education, their average age of demise is 67. So to have them retire and have Social Security at 65 makes sense, whereas college-educated people live almost 10 years longer, and this is for males. So I think if you made it scientific, it would allow the benefits to mm-hmm. filter out both across both class, you know, the class of people who live longer and also need the benefits less. So it's a double win.
So as you get your college degree, walking up on the stage and being handed it by the college president as pomp and circumstance plays in the background, you also get your wait 10 years for Medicare and Social Security compared to everybody else ticket.
I think that that's as fair a standard as an arbitrary cutoff at 62 or 65. And it bears, you know, you'd have to study it a little bit more firmly than just one study. But this is a fairly robust, large sample size, longitudinal study.
So that it gets pegged to people's expected life expectancy. Derek, thank you very much. We appreciate all your calls. You can keep the conversation going online. Go to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Some interesting stuff there from people under 40 regarding how to save Social Security and Medicare and how to pay for it and make sure it's there 30, 40 years from now. Brian Lehrer on WNYC coming up next. Why Governor Cuomo is supporting at least one Republican, which might mean a Republican majority, for the state Senate. Stay with us.